Welcome to the Center for Generosity podcast, where we work to equip generosity leaders. I'm Mitzi Schaefer, a consultant with GSB Fundraising, and today we are on week 3 of sharing our past content from our Congregational Vitality podcast. At the start of the pandemic, we knew that our congregations and nonprofits were struggling with how to message fundraising during a pandemic. So Mike Ward, GSB partner, and I did a 6-week podcast series simply to help them get through. That content dropped long before the Center for Generosity was even an idea, and so we hosted it in a different place, and it disappeared due to overwhelming requests. And quite frankly, we've dropped the last 2 weeks, and I'm getting messages almost on a daily basis asking deeper details about the content. So we know you guys are appreciating it, and thanks for letting us know that. But you've been asking for it, and so here is week 3 of the content. So last week, we covered playing the poor, pitiful us card is what we called it. But really, it's that scarcity kind of mentality that you're putting out into the world and asking people to give because you don't have any money and you just need money to keep operations going. And I have to tell you, Mike, that got the attention of our listeners. Most folks, it seems, didn't realize that that was even the message that they were sharing, and that they definitely didn't realize that it had a name or a label to it. And so I think it was really good for us to share that information. I appreciate you doing that. That's not an easy conversation to have. And the one we're going to have today is even harder, but I think it's going to be important for folks.
Last week's message was important because we've played the card before and we get a little bit of response to it. But what we don't really understand is that if we give people the opportunity to give, to invest in a mission, to invest in outcomes, they'll give even more. And I think it resonates with donors as they hear that, and they don't necessarily recognize that that's what their church has been doing, but they do wish and long for the church to shift to a mission focus, an outcome focus. And we find that people invest in that much more heavily with their financial gifts.
Yeah, absolutely true. I see that over and over and over again myself. So this week, we are going to dive into some uncomfortable territory, making tough financial decisions. Mike, during these times of high unemployment and not being able to gather revenue streams for churches and organizations is either diminished or gone in some capacities. Other revenue streams can disappear when you can't gather. And so to counter that, leaders are thinking about restricting their spending and even laying off or furloughing employees. And let's get into some best practices for making these decisions. And as we do, let's make sure we address a couple of things. One is the critical information necessary to make an informed decision. We want to make sure that our folks are not operating on emotion and they're operating on reality. And so I want to get into that. Second, how to model generosity for members and donors during these times, and including how to care for employees. And then the third thing I want to make sure that we talk about today is sharing the message of cuts with the community. How do we put that message out into the world? So this is a heavy one, so let's go ahead and dive in.
Very good.
All right. So what do you want to tell listeners are the critical things that leaders need to know before making a decision to cut budgets or spending or even staff?
Yeah, that's a great question. I know it's one that congregations are wrestling with in these days. And I think first and foremost, it's critical that leaders remind themselves of the mission of the organization. We're not simply about balancing books and making revenue and expenses match. Because if we end up cutting mission, we're cutting what we exist for. And so any cuts that happen, they're not financial cuts as much as they are mission cuts. And as we make cuts, we need to weigh what is the impact to our mission because of this. I think I've also been wrestling with, and it's a little bit against my personality, but you know, I believe that what we're living in right now is temporary. I mean, even the worst case scenarios are talking about 18 months. And so what can you do to make it 18 months? And I understand that revenue streams, you know, are drying up, they're going away. A lot of congregations were renting out space and the renters aren't allowed to gather, so they're not paying rent right now. Preschools were shut down. I mean, there's other things. Most of the folks I'm working with haven't seen the loss of giving from members so much. I mean, maybe a small hit, but not a hit to the level where you need to cut staff or you need to make those types of major cuts. But before you make any cut, you've got to remember your mission. And if you cut the core out of what you exist for, you're going to end up hurting yourself in other ways. First off, you're not going to be living out your mission, but your donors, the more you cut your mission, the more your donors are going to pull back. There's a congregation that I've been able to interact with here that very early on, the treasurer went through and slashed the budget and made the announcement of all the things that they cut in the budget. And what the treasurer meant was, we're being good stewards of your gifts. What the treasurer ended up telling people is, we just cut our mission. There's really no reason to give here. And giving plummeted in a community that hadn't been devastated by the COVID-19 outbreak. Employment was still where it was. Many people on fixed incomes whose incomes hadn't adjusted at all. Basically, what they ended up telling people is, we have no mission left to do, and therefore you should stop giving. So we worked to fix that situation. And so we've just got to be really careful with that, with what we cut, and how we go about it, and the timing that we do to get there, and then the steps that we might think about before we do start making cuts.
Yeah, and something else too, I want to piggyback on there, and I think it's evident in this, in the story that you just shared, is that in a lot of our congregations, we have one or two people making those decisions.
Right.
And if that's a fear-based personality, which it very well can be, and we need all sorts of personalities as a part of the conversation to come up with a well-rounded decision and an appropriate, faithful decision. But there's got to be multiple voices in the conversation, and you need mission-minded people in that conversation.
Absolutely. And at some level, you've got to make sure that you've involved your donors in the situation in whatever level is appropriate. I mean, and I know this gets sensitive, but if we start looking at, you know, furloughing staff, I mean, this is probably the one that causes the most anxiety for leaders, because it's people's lives. And it is something that should be taken very seriously. But when we start to cut staff, when we cut out positions, I hope when we do that, we're adversely affecting our mission, because otherwise we probably shouldn't have the staff person in the first place. But as we would look to cut out staff, if we're not inviting our donors somehow into that conversation, and personnel issues are tricky, but you can have conversations with donors about what some repercussions, you know, where you are. If you've exhausted, and I want to make sure we're not cutting before we've really done the good fundraising work that we talked about in previous episodes, and probably need to talk about even more because we've not done it so well in the church. But give the donors a chance to step up before you start just cutting everything away. Well, Mitzi, you know about me. I'm passionate about youth ministry. So if my church were to think about cutting a youth position that's caring for my kids in significant ways, or the kids of my congregation who I dearly love and am delighted to have that, and you don't give me a chance at least to say whether I can or can't increase my giving and just make that decision because you think there's no more money out there, you take an opportunity away from the donors. And I think when we do that, that's when the feelings get hurt. That's when people start to feel, and certainly when that happens, there's loss, right? I mean, and so there's grief. And then if there's grief when somebody could have done something about it, but they weren't given the opportunity to do so, I think that's where you start to even get angry. Now, I'm not a psychologist. Somebody else can kind of get into all what all those emotions are. But you know, and actually, too, if I had the opportunity to help, but you never gave me the opportunity, and you make the decision without me being part of the conversation, and I'd say me as donor, you know, without donors being part of the conversation, then you start to invite us to look elsewhere to satisfy the need that was fulfilled by the position that you just cut. So you cut youth ministry in my congregation. I'm still passionate about youth. So I'm going to find other places where I can invest in youth if you're not gonna. And that may even involve me cutting my giving there in order to do it somewhere else because you just took it away from me. Without getting me to the point where you are as leader making that decision, right? And so it's a tricky balance because it's personnel related. But some of those conversations can happen, you know, hopefully pastors, leaders of congregations know who people are that don't want to see something like that happen, might be able to offer a challenge gift for other people to rally behind to get something going. Could do a quiet little campaign amongst a few people to see if he can't get some momentum moving to then challenge the rest of the congregation. Because, I mean, at the same time, you never want to get up in front of a congregation and say, hey, we're going to have to fire the youth director if y'all don't give more. I mean, that's very inappropriate as well. And so we've got to be sensitive. There are ways to do it without breaching confidence and, you know, getting too far ahead of yourselves. But as we surround ourselves with people in that decision-making process for mission and ministry, we should involve our donors as well.
Yeah, and I think one of the phrases that I like that I've heard in the past is don't assume the no.
Right.
Don't assume that the donors don't have it or won't give it or will tell you no. Because again, it goes back to that mission piece. If they care about it and you're doing it, they're mm-hmm. going to support it. They're going to support it.
Right. I like that. And if you think your members are giving all you can, all they can, you're lying to yourself.
Yeah.
They're giving all they can to the level of mission that you're expressing.
Yeah.
And so raise that level of mission. That's why the first two podcasts went out in the order that they did, because we've got to go there first. We don't go first to cutting. We go first to communication. We go first to good practices before we get and have to start playing that it's time to cut card. Mm-hmm. And, you know, I mentioned a few minutes ago that I think this is temporary. So long term, I don't want to be operating any organization in deficit spending kind of scenarios. But these are days, if we have some reserves, it's okay to end this crisis without any. It might even be okay to have a bit of a line of credit that we didn't have before. You know, this is not, I mean, are we going to have a new normal? I believe we will, but I don't believe that new normal is a scarcity new normal. I believe it's a new normal with more opportunity for mission. I don't want to be cutting out the heart of our organization that's going to take us years to rebuild just because of some financial decisions. So invite your donors to greater participation. Suck it up a little bit and spend some reserves. I know that's hard for some people, you know, and see what we can do to invest in mission so that we can do more mission in these. I don't think God's calling us to less right now. I still don't believe that. I think God is calling us to more. And so before we cut, we need to really weigh heavily, what are we cutting? Are we cutting out what we exist for? And if we do that, might be a time to put the for sale sign out in front of the building and just call it quits and let somebody else do it, because it's not about organizational survival. Now, be good stewards, but it's about living it, lean into your mission, live out your mission, and impact the world and see if people don't want to invest more in that.
Absolutely. And I think the having multiple voices at the table for the spending piece, for the tapping into your reserve. I know as a gift planner, I was in a lot of congregations that like to hold on to money, and they had tons and tons of money put away, and they were worried about the future. And a lot of times one voice or two voices can be the holdup there. So have multiple folks at the conversation, and you want mission-minded people at the table. So,
absolutely.
Mike, that was really good information, all focusing us back to mission. Is there anything that a congregation can do besides cutting?
You know, I think there is. I actually, in the past week and a half, I've had two congregations I work with launch special gift appeals. Both were facility issues. One had an air conditioner and a roof issue, and they need $90,000. This is a congregation with a $350,000 operating budget. So it's a significant amount towards what their normal revenues are. Polled the council. The council was, every member of council was willing to make an additional gift. Just yesterday, I got notification from the pastor that they got a $10,000 gift, which was the largest gift we projected they needed to reach their goal. So instead of saying, hey, we're not in the building, we can't use it, we're going to have to set it aside, they simply said, let's see what our members are willing to do and continue to move that forward. And you can do that with, you know, things other than property issues. Property issues tend to be some of the biggest money eaters in our congregations, but a special gift appeal for ministry, a special gift appeal to keep your outreach strong, I think can happen. And we're still seeing the response of people in the United States is just tremendous, that they're willing to step up. So don't be afraid for that. The other thing, I talked to a pastor, I guess it's been a week and a half or so now, they got their PPP loan. And the PPP loan was $56,000. And I said, Pastor, realistically, how much of that do you expect to need? And he said, worst case scenario, we probably only need 21,000 of it. And so there's $35,000 sitting there that I believe would be unethical to carry over. I mean, but now by law, the PPP money has to be invested into staff and things, but it will be offset by other gifts. And so he and I talked in ways of how can they do more significant outreach with that money. So those of you that applied for PPP, just remember that's not there to help you build your reserves. That money was given so that we can live out our mission. And I mean, we're nonprofits in our communities. We get that status because the government expects us to make an impact in our communities. And so what we do when we get money from the government isn't to hoard it, it is to deploy it. And that is to keep people employed. I don't know how congregations are always looking at that, if they're looking at that now as a slush fund or if that's money that they feel ethically they've got to deploy. And I do believe that ethically that money's got to be deployed. Not if that congregation I just mentioned ends up with a $35,000 surplus at the end of the year, I believe I might call an auditor because I just don't think that's right. We've got to be about mission now more than ever and living that out. So, and then be creative. Are there new partners out there that need you? Is there another organization out there that, you know, couldn't pay their rent in another place you can offer cheaper and get some more revenue coming in? Are there ways in which you can do things different, that can help you, to make a difference? And churches don't always look at partners as well as they could. That we kind of stand alone too often. And the key in the nonprofit world, you know, is to be in partnership with other people and to be better in mission together. And so be creative before you start cutting. Be bold and talk to some donors before you start cutting. And just make sure you've looked at everything, you know, before you start cutting.
I want to follow up there too, because I know I have lots of pastor friends and have been in so many congregations, and there are folks who do that naturally and folks who don't do that naturally. The following up with donors, that for some people that's comfortable and for some people that's incredibly uncomfortable. And what I would say is you if that's uncomfortable for you, recognize that you need to do it and then ask for help. You know, ask a mic. Somebody that can help you with the words and the process, because there is a process to it. It's not magic. It doesn't just happen. There's a process to it. And the process can give you the courage to do that conversation, to have that conversation. And so ask for help. You know, our synods across the country, our synods have resources and access. And, you know, Mike and his group at GSB is a great one, but ask for help. That would be my pushback there, mm-hmm. for pastors. So,
good.
Okay, Mike, this is heavy stuff. We've got one more question for you today that we want to tackle, and that is cutting is hard. Mm-hmm. And a lot of emotion is wrapped up in people's expectations and their livelihoods. How does a congregation leader share the information if they do get to the point that they have to cut.
Yeah. You know, I think this is a point for, you know, great care. Everything you've learned in pastoral care class and on CPE kind of needs to come out at this time. And so I think it's easier to share if you've explored all the mission aspects of it. I think it's easier to share if you've explored, you know, where are the donors in all this? I mean, if your mission goes away, then your mission goes away and you aren't living out your mission anymore. And so there is a place to preserve the organization. And so I think it takes great care. Certainly as you're talking to the individual who's affected, if you're cutting a staff position and as you're sharing that then with the congregation and as you're sharing that with the congregation, it's to keep pointing people to the ways in which mission will be impacted as you move ahead now, because you're losing something by losing that staff person. How is it that you will continue to live out that piece of your mission? And pointing people to a future day. I think casting a vision helps people through the tough times. I think because if you leave people stuck in the moment too long, then it's going to be hard to get them to continue to want to go with you. And so certainly recognize that there's loss, recognize that there's grief, recognize that there's pain, but then also begin to move people to what's the future look like. And if God's there, isn't that a good and robust future?
So. Yeah. And I'd like to follow up to pastors are not folks who have to let people go on a regular basis. And we're us rostered leaders are feeling kind of people. We have lots of feels. And so I do think it's important if you do have to do that to remember it's not about you. It's mm-hmm. about the person sitting across the table from you. And while you have feelings, that is not what a person who's being let go wants to hear. They want to hear, oh my gosh, what's going to happen to me? And once you tell them they've lost their job or they're furloughed, they don't hear anything else. And so just don't try to justify, just say the thing that needs to be said and then let them have the feelings. You're there to be quiet and listen. Let them get mad. It's not about you. It's about them. And I just think it's really important for pastors and rostered leaders to know that if they're having to have those conversations.
Thank you for listening to today's episode of the Center for Generosity podcast, which is actually an older Congregational Vitality podcast from before the pandemic. If you'd like to join the Center for Generosity, you can visit centerforgenerosity.com, where you will find accountability, focus, tools, and plans to grow generosity to your organization. You have an impact, friends. Let's make sure the world knows about that so that they can support your mission and your passion. With a monthly subscription to the center, you get exclusive access to regular roundtable discussions with our consultants like Mike, and you can jump on our calendars for office hours to help process things that are going on in your organization. As we're coming out of the pandemic, you may find yourselves now in a position where you need to rethink your budget. And if that's the case, call us first before you have to make cuts. You will in the center also have ongoing access to documents and videos that train and outline best practices for CEOs, development officers, volunteers, and board members. And don't forget the big bulk of master classes that are coming out now. So, we hope to see you in the Center for Generosity. And until then, share this podcast with someone who you think would benefit from it. And if you could leave us a review, we would really like that. We would really appreciate it. So thanks a lot. Till next time. I should tell you we're off next week for the holidays, but we'll be back with episode 4 of the Congregational Vitality podcast after the new year. So happy new year, everyone. Bye-bye now.